श्रीला गुरुदेव की
जय।
श्रीमन महाप्रभु की
जय।
श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री श्री ब्रजनाथ हलदार की जय। श्री श्री मुख भगवान की जय। ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। श्री ब्रह्म श्रुति की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद। Good afternoon to all of you. Thanks so much for coming. Welcome. Today we are continuing with our series on Sri Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Brahmaji. Today is our last lecture in connection to this topic. Tomorrow we will have one last lecture in connection to Vrindavan Das Thakur's Tirubhav Mahotsav. But today is the last lecture in Brahma Stuti. Here in Kansas will be this is the sixth class, and today we are studying verse number 4 of 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But as usual, we will make some brief recap of what we were studying yesterday. Verse number 3, famous one: Gyan prayasudapasyana manta eva stanestita srutigatam tanumar manobi ye prayasujitaito pyasitra istilokim. I skipped the second line, sorry. Yuvanti sammukharitam bhavaviyadartam. So here Brahma is saying to Krishna, O Bhagavan, although as a general rule you are invincible throughout the three worlds, even you becoming conquered by those who, having abandoned all striving for jnana, live their lives solely for venerating through body, speech and mind the sacred narrations of your lilas. Such narrations enter their ears of their own accord, flowing from the mouths of sages, while they remain situated in a fixed location. So, so this is a very important verse from the Bhagavatam and from the Brahma Stuti, in which Sri Brahmaji is delineating or presenting the idea of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, which means, as we put it in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, brain dead bhakti. Bhakti in which the head is no longer a baggage, basically. No, it's, we are relieved from the weight of the head, if you will. The heart is enough awakened so the head can be put in its place, basically. So Mahaprabhu, in his conversation with Sri Rai Ramananda, Ramananda Sambhat, at one point, as we mentioned, in the context of describing which is the goal of life and how to attain it, Ramananda Rai presents different proposals and Mahaprabhu rejects all of them as superficial, continue superficial, go deeper. But when he quotes this verse in the context of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, Mahaprabhu says, that's fine, that's nice. Now elaborate upon that. So he accepts this is a valid foundation for what I want you to end, where I want you to converge, which conclusion I want to hear from your lips. It all, in one sense, begins on this foundation, Gyan Sunya Bhakti, because the goal is Braja Bhakti, and as we say, the foundation of Braja Bhakti is Gyan Sunya Bhakti. Gyan Sunya Bhakti means Bhakti, the unencumbered or devoid of knowledge. Which type of knowledge? Devoid for the attempt of cultivating jnana for the goal of mukti. Or in another sense, are even more applicable to the Brajavasis, bhakti in which you are not aware, you don't have the knowledge in the dynamics of the lila that Krishna is God. You know him in other, there's another type of knowledge. You know Krishna, but through the eyes of love, if you will. No? So the idea of Krishna as God lies behind that conception, basically. So these are two important points. Again, as we mentioned, this idea of Gyan Sunya Bhakti is only found in Vrindavan. Only in Vrindavan we will see that devotees relate to Krishna as their friend, as their child, as their lover, and not as God. God is somewhere, someone else. Even Krishna in Mathura or Krishna in Dwarka, devotees that approach him are aware he is God. In Dwarka, devotees are aware Krishna is God. Even in Mathura, when Krishna was born from Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa, they were aware, you are God. You are our child, but you are God. So their bhava has a mixture. There is some Vatsalya, but there is this Aishvarya. No? Like when Arjuna is seeing Krishna, his friend, Arjuna is in Sakya Rasa with Krishna, but the type of Sakya in which when Krishna shows his Aishvarya, his Sakya recedes to the background. Like when Krishna is showing Vishwarup in the Bhagavad Gita, universal form. Arjuna is not saying, "Hey, pal, how are you doing?" No? He's like totally like traumatized, almost saying, "Excuse me so much for considering you my friend and sitting on the same place with you and talking with you informally. Now I realize who you are," and he starts to cry and tremble. But if Krishna is doing something similar in Vrindavan with his gopas, they will just like joke at him. No, maybe telling him, what are you doing showing all that form with many arms? I mean, we know who you are. Stop playing tricks on us. Come back and return and be our friend. Who actually you are, basically. So again, all in Vrindavan we found Gyan Sunya Bhakti, which is the land that Brahma wants to enter. Brahma wants to become a friend of Krishna in Vrindavan. So he's establishing this foundation for his own goal, which has, of course, to do with the idea of Raga Bhakti, Raga Noga Bhakti, which is basically the path towards Vrindavan. We have Vaidhi Bhakti, which is the path towards Vaikuntha, the path of reverential love in awe and majesty, which properly followed will take you to the majestic realm of Vaikuntha. But if you want to enter into Vrindavan and to serve on the basis of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, Raga Nuga Bhakti is a path, basically. Of course, it's another series altogether to enter into details of Vaidhi Bhakti, Raga Nuga Bhakti. But this is the point here. At the same time, we mentioned how in Vrindavan, although all this Aishwarya and all this Gyan is not overtly present, nonetheless, it's still present in the background. For example, when Krishna is showing to Brahma all these unlimited Vishnus coming from him, that's full Aishwarya and full Gyan. And with all these quote-unquote uncivilized Brajavasis appear in Gaur-lila like the Goswamis, how much knowledge don't they have? They are full of knowledge. But in the lila, there's not necessary in the flow of that lila, so that's receding to the background, basically. So among many things, this verse also says sanishtita, an important statement, which means no matter in which situation you are in society, you can serve Krishna, basically. In other words, bhakti is above varnashram. No matter which birth you have, no matter if you are a Brahmin or Kshatriya, Brahmachari, an outcast, whatever, bhakti is so powerful. It's the inner internal energy of Bhagavan that has descent to the lowest of the lowest and grand redemption from there. Or also, sthanishtita means not desiring to go anywhere else. So that's the situation of Krishna's friends in Vrindavan. They are so satisfied with serving him, they don't care for anything, and they don't even care for mukti. And Krishna shows them, this is your next life. You will be doing exactly the same that what you are doing now. And they start to celebrate. Oh, great. So that shows how bhakti is a post-liberated status. It's above liberation, basically. The devotees do not care for liberation. And it's very user-friendly, as we mentioned. It's very easy in comparison, bhakti, in comparison to karma, which you have to perform so much penance and tapas in comparison in comparison to karma that you have to follow so many rules, regulations. Bhakti is considerably user-friendly, basically. Just hear Harikatha, just, of course. You have to do something, no? You have to pay attention. You have to be open, sincere. You have to hear from the proper source. Our acharyas here was saying, even you don't need to go to pilgrimage here and there. If you are in a place where proper Harikatha is being given, that's the place of pilgrimage. Because if you go to a holy place, it's to meet holy people and hear holy narrations. If not, you are doing just tourism. But if you can hear holy narration from holy people in Kansas, in Argentina, in whatever, that in itself becomes a holy place, interestingly. Very interesting idea given him. So in this way, Brahma is saying here, try to stop thinking, try to not depend exclusively of your head. And Brahma has four heads, he thinks a lot. He's having a big headache here. He said, try to engage in gyan prayasa udapasya, totally rejecting all this unnecessary effort in which you try to understand everything through your head. And instead, namanta eva, put your head on the ground and offer pranam. And by doing that, you will receive much more knowledge than trying to capture everything with your intellect. Of course, we have to think. We mentioned yesterday, this idea of Gyan Sunya Bhakti is not a license to be lazy intellectually. No, I don't want to use my... We have to use our head and mind, but to the point that it shows us we reach the limit. This is our limit. Now, when you properly use your head, the head will show you I can accompany you till this point of the journey. Beyond that, you need revelation. You need the infinite descending. So if you engage in that way, Brahma said yesterday, Ajita becomes Jita. Ajita is the unconquerable one, Krishna, becomes Jita, conquered by love, conquered by those devotees who hear from him, like the gopas, who fully conquer Krishna by rendering such service. Tanu mam manovir. They offer, they serve Krishna with words, body, and mind. Or Krishna offers his words, body, and mind to him, to them, in service. Each of the meanings is equally applicable, basically. Krishna, that's the God we worship. Bhagavan Krishna, who is a devotee of his devotees, in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, in the full embrace of the intimacy of his devotees. Krishna in Vrindavan is, how to say, as we said the other day, Narayana in Vaikuntha is God in the office, basically. Krishna in Vrindavan is God at home. No? At home you are barefoot, you don't wear shoes, you don't have tie and suit and all this formality and bureaucracy. You are just at home. So that's Krishna. There's one joke in this connection. May I share that with you? It's a devotional one, just in case. It's a Siddhantic joke, so you have to follow that. So it's going to this point, God at home. So once there were two friends when they were young, and they were very close friends during their teenagehood, but eventually life took them in different paths. So one became a Gaudiya Vaishnav sadhu, and the other one became the Pope, interestingly. They shared some religious samskars. So eventually, not many years passed, and themselves didn't know anything about each other. They passed like 20, 30, 40 years, and eventually, through Facebook or something like that, they get to know each other again. Because, I mean, you start, if someone is the Pope, at one point you know who is the Pope. No? So this sadhu who was in Vrindavan, he contacted his friend, the Pope now. So they start to speak, and the Pope say, I invite you to come to the Vatican so we can share how our life had gone all these decades and share our insights. So, okay. So the sadhu goes from Braj to Italy, not to Rome, to the Vatican. So they see each other and they start to greet and they share so many things to share for so many years. So at one point there, I can make the joke very long, and I will make it short. So they are in one room there, and at one point the sadhu sees one red telephone on the back of the room. So he asked the Pope, like, what's that telephone? And because it was like red and on one corner, it seemed weird. No? This is in the time when there was no cell phone yet, so try to travel in time. A few decades
ago.
Yeah, we can update the version of the joke and change the model, but whatever. So the Pope tells the sadhu, the devotee, oh, that's a phone to speak with God. Oh, that's interesting. So do you want to try, says the Pope. Do you need some to speak something? Well, I can try, yeah, something I could share. Okay, so devotee goes, but it was just a few minutes, 1-3 minutes, he spoke with Krishna. No? Still he was... not full Gyan Sunya Bhakti. Well, the point is, he spoke with him 2-3 minutes, okay, so at the end I say, okay, how much is the cost of the call? He tells the Pope. No, he said like $300. I say, oops, okay. Okay, we are calling God, it's not a cheap call. So the sadhu had some madhukari he made, so he gives to the Pope. And he departs. But eventually, the Pope is invited by the sadhu to go to Vrindavan, so to reciprocate. So the Pope goes to Vrindavan, big event. So the sadhu takes it. Sorry?
Vrindavan is very nice, I went there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the sadhu is taking the Pope on parikram here and there, and they are in his bhajan kutir, and at one point the Pope sees a red phone in the bhajan kutir of the sadhu. So he asks the sadhu, so this is what I think it is? And the sadhu said, yes. So can I call? I need to speak a good amount of things with God. I have lots of stuff here and there in the Vatican. I need to solve many, many issues. So sadhu said, yeah, no problem. So the Pope starts to speak, no? And he's speaking like 4 hours approximately. No? He has lots of managerial stuff to deal with, basically. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the call, no, he goes to the cell, says, okay, how much is the call? No? So the cell says, well, like 60 rupees, which is like $1 or something. No? So the Pope was like, what? Yeah, 60 rupees. He checked, that's 60 rupees. But I spoke only 4 hours. 60 rupees. You spoke on the Vatican 2 minutes and it was $300. No? So the cell says, yeah, but this was local call here. That's the idea, no? Krishna is God at home, basically. Mm. That's the conclusion. So anyhow. We have devotional jokes as well. So that's to conclude our recap of the last class, which have not begun yet today's class. Okay. So today Brahma will continue with some further implications for the past verse, and he will focus especially on the futility of jnana devoid of bhakti. So basically today's talk will be about the uselessness of jnana without bhakti. So remember, in contrast to Gyan Sunya Bhakti, what was presented in the previous verse, Bhakti devoid of all type of Gyan, it is said that Gyan is not only an inferior method to Bhakti, but also Gyan depends on Bhakti to give its desired fruit. Not only Gyan, karma, any process. Now we are focusing on Gyan here. So in today's verse, this will be shown. If you engage in Gyan separate from Bhakti, you have no result, basically, no fruit. So Sanatana Goswami, before going to the verse, he tried to give a little background, and he says that it has been stated that the highest results come from bhakti. So why should, he says, the greatness of bhakti be described as everything? By giving up this bhakti, persons engaging in jnana just suffer greatly. This is explained in this verse, basically. So let's see how jnanis without bhakti suffer a lot. This is what the verse will speak about. So today's verse is in a different meter, in a different chanda. It's called Indravamsa. It's not Basanta Tilaka at the first three. So different meters in different verses. It's a similar meter almost, but a little different. So I'll recite in Sanskrit. You can follow here. And then I will read the English translation. Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudasya Devi Bhu Kleshanti Ye Kivala Bodhalabdhaye Tesham Maso Kleshala Eva Sishyate Nanyat Yathastula Tusabhagatinam. O Almighty Lord, those who discard bhakti unto you, which is the means to supreme blessedness, and strive instead to attain realization of the radically unqualified absolute, are left in the end with nothing more than their own labor, like those engaged in threshing coarse husks devoid of grain. Coarse, you say? Coarse husks devoid of grain. So this is a famous verse from the Bhagavatam, quite well known one, which basically is mentioning this. On one side, establishing bhakti is this path of supreme blessedness or supreme auspiciousness, establishing first to begin with that. Bhakti is the highest path. And those who, instead of fully embracing bhakti, strive for oneness with Brahman, basically, with the radically unqualified absolute, if you will, Nirvishesh Brahman, they are left with nothing apart from their endeavor to attain something that they did not attain. Like if you take not grains, but these empty husks and try to beat them, hoping that something will come, and the only thing you're doing is wasting your time and energy, basically. So that's the analogy given here. So let's go to the word by word, as usual, to begin with. So I will mention word by word, and you can follow there. So the first concept is Shreya Shritim. So Shreya Shritim means the path of supreme blessedness or auspiciousness. Shreya refers to real benefit. You have in Sanskrit the idea of Shreya and Preya. So Preya means something that you can attain quickly, But as quickly as you can attain it, the quicker also disappears. No? Some basically immediate sense enjoyment that as comes quickly also disappears quickly. Shreya. But Shreya means something that may take a little bit more time in manifesting, but a result will be more enduring at the same time. So Shreya Shritim, the path of supreme auspiciousness or blessedness, referring to bhakti, of course. The next word is bhakti. So bhakti means Shreya Shritim, the path of supreme auspiciousness. Klesha Agni Subhada. No? All auspiciousness come from bhakti. Udasya. And again, the word udasya. The previous verse was Gyan Prayasa Udapasya. It's the same idea. Udasya means having rejected. So those who have rejected this path of supreme auspiciousness, they, Vibho, it's a name for Krishna, Brahma is calling Krishna, O Almighty Lord. Vibho means something like pervader. Pervader, you see? No? Krishna is pervading everything, so the one who pervades is the pervader. So again, these prayers, remember, had a certain color of Aishwarya yet. No, Brahma is not praying just, I'm a Gopa. Still, he's quite aware, you are the source of everything. Remember, he has just that experience. Krishna is all pervading, so many forms manifesting from him, and so on. So, Vibho, oh pervader. So, those who reject this bhakti, this path of supreme auspiciousness, Klishyanti, Klishyanti means struggle, Ye means who, Kevala Bodha, of knowledge concerning oneness. Now, Kevala Bodha means, Bodha has to do with knowledge, and Kevala means oneness. So those who want this oneness, attain for that, struggle. Labdhaye. Labdhaye means for the achievement. So those who want to achieve this oneness, struggle. Tesham stands means for them. For them there is a struggle, basically. Aso comes there, which means this. So this understanding, basically this idea of I want to become one instead of accepting bhakti, kleshalaha. Kleshalaha is connected to the idea of klesha. You may have heard the word klesha. What does it mean? Klesha.
Like trouble.
Yeah.
Misery.
Affliction, trouble, misery. So kleshalaha means is a giver of affliction. So this type of idea, I struggle for oneness, rejecting the supreme path of auspiciousness. Eva means merely, and sishyate means remains. Now anyad means nothing other. We'll, of course, elaborate more on these words. And then comes the example to illustrate this. Jata, which means just us. Stula tusha, empty husks. Abhagatinam, for those who are threshing. Threshing?
Threshing, yeah.
So this is just like those who are threshing empty husks. What they will receive? Nanya, nothing. Basically. I mean, they will receive something. They will the hands, as we will see, the hands will be totally destroyed. They will lose time. They will be tired. That's what they receive.
Inflation.
Yeah, basically. So, I'll continue with, as we are doing these days, I will share Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad, which is my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse, which will appear in his forthcoming book. And then we will go through some of the different commentaries from the ancient commentators of the Bhagavatam. So, my Guru Maharaj says like this. Brahma then continues to speak very strongly, yet indirectly, in praise of bhakti. So there are two ways. No? Ambayabhyatireka. You can say something directly, or you can say something indirectly. Many times we need the two things. Sometimes indirectly helps us more to grasp certain things. Many verses in Shastra, for example, Smartavya Satatam Vishnur Bhishmartavya Najatuchit. Always remember God, and then never forget God. Which basically means, I mean, first line already includes the second line. If you always remember God, you will never forget Him. But just in case, never forget him. And sometimes for us will be more like, oh yeah, never forget him. Instead of always remember. Oh, in Krishna, Arjuna is asking Krishna, what's the soul like? And Krishna starts to say, what the soul is not. Soul cannot be killed, soul cannot be dried, soul cannot be burned, soul is not this, soul is not that. No, 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 no. Indirectly, what the soul is not. Because, of course, it's difficult to say what's the Atma, because for describing something, you had to compare what you are describing with something else. You follow? So, what you can compare the Atma with? The Atma is categorically different to anything in this world. And everything in this world belongs to one category, Maya Tattva, Maya Shakti. The Atma is a totally different category. How can you compare one thing with the other? So it's difficult to say, the Atma is like what? So you have to begin saying, it's not like this, it's not like that, it's not this, it's not that. And at the end of the description, Krishna says something directly, if you want to put it like that. And he uses the term Ashcharyabhat 3 times in the Gita. Ashcharyabhat, 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 which means astonishing, formidable. The Atma is astonishing, astonishing, astonishing. That's what I can say, basically. He says like this. So the point is, there are direct and indirect ways of speaking. So here, Brahma mostly speaking indirectly about the glories of bhakti. Of course, he's saying bhakti is a path of supreme auspiciousness. That's pretty direct. But everything else he's saying is indirect by speaking how another path like jnana, without connection with bhakti, is not giving anything but misery. So it's indirectly saying how important bhakti is to give results to even other processes. And of course, the further indirect idea is, if another path like jnana depends so much to bhakti, because without bhakti it becomes only a headache, but with bhakti you can attain the success in jnana, if bhakti is such an active principle, so important, so what must it be if one just engages in bhakti directly? Again, this is not said directly, but indirectly that's suggested. Now, showing, without bhakti, jnana is a headache. So, okay, with bhakti, jnana gives its fruit. So it seems that every process needs bhakti to give its results. So if you are intelligent, you will ask, and what if I only engage in bhakti? Again, Brahma is not saying that directly, but indirectly all that is implied there. That's, as we mentioned the other day, it's called Kaimutya Nyaya. This logic of what if. If this is like this, what if? If every process requires bhakti to give its result, what if you only engage in bhakti? What must be that result? So, again, Brahma then continues to speak very strongly, yet indirectly, in praise of bhakti, stating that those who reject bhakti, the path of the highest good, again, Shreya Shritim, in pursuit of spiritual monism, oneness, kevala bhoda labdhaye, that person, those people, experience only the trouble they have undertaken on paths such as jnana and not the desired goal. So, again, independently of bhakti, instead of receiving their goal, just experience difficulty. In contrast, the benefits of bhakti are many, both in this world, in the stage of sadhana, and in the next, in the stages of bhava and prem. So, that's another contrast. A path of jnana is painful from day one, and you don't attain the goal. A path of bhakti is easy and pleasurable, even in the stage of practice, what to speak, imperfection. Therefore, lesser gains, such as realizing the extent to which the Atma is one with its source, which is the aim of the jnanis, is also included within its scope. So the idea is, whatever other processes can afford or provide, bhakti, it comes as a byproduct of engaging in bhakti. Interestingly. For example, Krishna says in the Gita, if you want to attain the position of Brahma, you have to perform Varna Ashram Dharma perfectly for 100 lifetimes. Which is like, just thinking about 10 minutes of performing Varnashram perfectly and you collapse. Because so many rules and so many details, I mean, you go crazy. Imagine 100 lifetimes, you attain the position of Brahma. By doing that perfectly, then Krishna says in the Gita, if you engage in bhakti imperfectly, you get born as a demigod. So basically, he's saying the same. You're going to attain the same position by doing Varnashram 100 lifetimes perfectly, by engaging imperfectly in bhakti. Like implying how much all the fruits of other paths are included in bhakti as a byproduct, even if you do bhakti not so perfectly. So again, the question is, what if I do bhakti perfectly? What must be that result? What must be that goal? And of course, that's the goal Brahma wants, no? To enter into the Braj and serve there. Thus, one more paragraph. In two verses, this and the previous one, Brahma, speaking with emotion for bhakti, explains that rejecting jnana and in its stead embracing bhakti, regardless of one's social religious status, sthanesthita, and corresponding measure of karmic implication, one conquers Krishna by such bhakti. Whereas rejecting bhakti, even if one embraces jnana in its stead, will bear no fruit whatsoever. Strong words. So interestingly, that's a contrast, no? In comparison, remember there's always some thread that connects one verse with the other. So in yesterday's verse, Brahma was saying, no matter in which position you are in society, you can engage in bhakti. No matter, in other words, if you pay attention or not to Varna Ashram or Karma Mark, if you even neglect that but engage properly in bhakti, you attain everything. But here it's saying, if you engage in jnana but neglect bhakti, you don't attain anything. So that's the idea, no? If you engage in bhakti nicely and neglect everything else, no problem. Indeed, that's a required shraddha you have to have for engaging in bhakti. Shraddha sabdevi shvashkaye sudrida nishtaye krishna karma krishna bhakti karma kaile sarvakrita hoy. Shraddha in bhakti means that I have this conviction. By engaging in bhakti, I don't need to engage in anything else. So even if you neglect everything else but engage in bhakti, you obtain everything. But if you engage in anything else but neglect bhakti, you don't obtain anything. You obtain nothing. I mean, big headache. So that's the contrast that Brahma is trying to make. And yes, there are strong words because it's a strong, important point. So let's go to some of the commentaries from our ancient tradition, beginning with Sridhar Swami. Can we turn on this light? Yes. The famous commentator of the Bhagavatam. So Sridhar Swami is saying, thank you. He's paraphrasing Brahma. So Sridhar Swami said, in this verse, Brahma says, without bhakti, jnana is never accomplished. And the fruit of jnana, which is trance or perfect knowledge, without bhakti is never accomplished. By Shreya Shritim, which was the meaning of this? Come on.
It takes a little longer to get the result. So.
That's Shreya. And Shritim? You have to hear attentively. Last class was all about that. Shreya Shritim. What's bhakti?
Bhakti.
Is there? What?
The meaning is the means.
What's bhakti? No. Someone online there?
No.
Bhakti is the path of supreme auspiciousness or blessedness. Yeah. So, by Shreya Shritim, Sridhar Swami says, Brahma implies that bhakti is that from which there is a flow of the best things in life. That's how Sridhar Swami translates Shreya Shritim. No? It's another way of saying the path of auspiciousness. That from which there is a flow of the best things in life. The best things that you could possibly imagine and more. Because our imagination is quite limited about what's the best thing in life. As my Guru Maharaj said, generally we think the best things in life are things. The best things in life are not things. So he said, that from which there is a flow of the bad things in life, which are like waterfalls coming from a lake. So bhakti is that lake, and from it come so many waterfalls of blessings. So again, the point of Sri Tarasvami is, bhakti is easy and bestows all blessings. You can start right now engaging the very senses you were using yesterday for sense gratification. You can engage them now in bhakti. Hrishikena Hrishikesa Sivanam Bhakti Ruchati. That's sadhana bhakti. Use your senses for the pleasure of the master of the senses. One name of Krishna is Hrishikesh. He is the perfect object for your senses to direct to him. And Sridhar Swami says that Brahma concludes, of those who abandon devotional service, to you only affliction remains. Again, the same point here. With the example of beating empty husks of grain. There's lots of effort, but there's no gain. And with bhakti, there's not that much effort and so much result, so much more. So that's again the... Of course, there has to be some effort, as we mentioned, to get grace. But in comparison to the struggles that jnanis, yogis have to endure, there's no point of comparison. And again, what's the result? A jnani may make so much effort to try to concentrate and think and meditate, I am one, so aham brahmasmi, and so on. But without the grace of bhakti, only loss of time and energy, basically. Sanatan Goswami, let's go to his Brihat Vaishnava Toshani, his commentary. Those who reject bhakti suffer to attain realization of the self, devoid of bhakti. In other words, the point here over and over again is, if you want to attain Brahman or something, we do not condemn you, although it's not our goal, but please understand that without bhakti, that won't happen. You need bhakti. Even to attain some other goal, which ultimately has not that much to do with bhakti. In that case, even you need bhakti. If you don't take bhakti, Sanatana Goswami say, they take great effort to observe yamas and niyamas, do's and don'ts, rules and regulations, in order to attain understanding of the pure Atma. Or they go here and there to obtain proper hearing and contemplation of the Upanishads and make efforts in order to attain understanding of the Atma and mixed with bhakti. They go to different Upanishadic presentation discourses about these abstract dictums of Shastra that you are one and everything is Brahman and so on, but are mixed with bhakti. But all they attain is suffering, Brahma is saying here. Swarga and purification of the heart are excluded as results here. So they do not attain purification of the heart, they do not even attain heavenly delights, if you will. Sanatana Goswami said, but at this point someone may argue, but by practicing yoga one can obtain wealth and position. And the reply is the word na anyat, which means nothing more. Which means other methods gives no result. So no, that won't happen actually. At the end, in the long run, you don't obtain anything. Vallabhacharya says something similar in his commentary. All of them are really strong in this point. You don't obtain anything without bhakti. It seems you may obtain something, that's nothing in the long run. So Vallabhacharya says, only their exertion, which involves trouble, remains. That's the only thing that they remain. Someone may argue, a good result, though secondary, will be accomplished by that exertion. In order to repudiate this speculation, Brahma says, nanyat. There's no good result, not even a concomitant one. In the words of Viraragava, which is another commentator, he says, this situation invites trouble. That's the only thing that is happening when you try to, again, approach the infinite without the grace of the infinite, without resorting to the help of the infinite, just ascending process, constructing your own stairway to heaven, if you will. Ascending, like, I will do it by myself. I construct this and I... Aroha Panta in Sanskrit, like ascending method instead of Avaroha Panta, descending method. We follow the descending method. We do our effort by hoping for grace to descend. But if you want just depend on your effort or your own capacity, okay, the situation invites trouble. Be ready for trouble, klesha. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. In chapter 12, verse number 5. Do not be distracted, please. Okay. I will ask something else and you may be distracted.
Sorry.
What does the Gita say?
I'm very sorry.
Say that again, Maharaj. Forgive me.
Which verse in the Gita says that the process of Gyan brings misery and affliction? Chapter 12.
Chapter 12, verse like
verse 5.
Yes.
But you have to say the verse. We have to begin somewhere. It's okay. He gave us an important clue. Yeah. Klesha dikataraste sam abhyakta shakta cheta sam abhyakta higatir dukam dehabadbir.
I don't know that.
No? Okay, it's interesting. Abhadbir abhyakta. No, it's okay. It's okay. More than half the question. Thank you so much. So Krishna is saying there basically that. Now, those who strive for whose minds, abhyakta ashakta chitta sam, whose mind is abhyakta ashakta. Ashakta means attached. There is a sakti, so they are asakta. They have attachment to the abhyakta, to the unmanifest. Those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest, klesha, nikataras, their path is difficult, full of affliction. So similar version here in the Bhagavatam. So Sanatana Goswami, of course, continues saying, a suitable example is given to illustrate how basically useless is this engagement. He says, fools who beat empty husk become the laughing stock of others. The husk simply becomes finer and gets destroyed. The fool gets sore hands. Oh Lord, everyone should worship you. So one would say, wow, these are strong words. Sanatana Goswami is calling fool these people. I mean, this is maybe too much to call Gyanis fool. It may sound pretty sectarian. But if you analyze the example and how appropriate this and what are the implications of this situation, I mean, technically speaking, this is a complete waste of time. This is a complete waste of time. There's no purpose at all. So if you call someone fool because of doing something that has no purpose at all, it's not an insult, it's an objective fact. and you are doing maybe saying that with compassion, trying to help that person to change their mind. Sanatana Goswami also refers to the word Bibho, the word that Brahma is using to address Krishna. Remember? Which meant?
Unto you.
No.
No.
Vibho.
Oh, it's Almighty Lord.
Yeah, but also we explain something else. Pervader.
Oh, pervader. Yes, pervader. Yes.
Not in the translation, Maharaj.
Sorry?
Not in the translation.
Oh, yeah. It's his fault. He drew the verse, so you have to speak it. So Sanatana Goswami said that the drift or the gist of that name is that, again, what Sanatana Goswami said, everyone should worship Krishna instead of trying independently to attain some gain in transcendence. Everyone should worship you. Brahma is like having this deep insight, epiphany here. Everyone should worship you to attain transcendence. Otherwise, they might fall into different hellish conditions, he's mentioning. He quotes one verse from the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which says, if any of the members of the varnas or the ashrams fail to worship Bhagavan and thus disrespect the Lord, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their ashram to some inferior situation. So this is a verse more connected to karma and not to gyan, but the principle is the same. If you are engaged in karma or varna ashram and fail to worship Bhagavan, you fall from that position. If you are engaged in gyan or yoga and fail to worship Bhagavan, eventually you will fall from that position. Because all those processes require bhakti to give their fruit. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes another verse similar in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 81, verse 19. Sarga varga yopumsam, how is it? Rasayam bhuvi sampadam, sarvasam apisidanam, Mula Tat Charanarchanam, basically, which says to render devotional service to your lotus feet is the root cause of all perfection that a person can obtain in heaven, in liberation, in hell, or on earth. So whatever perfection one can attain in any position, in any situation, through any practice, the root cause of that perfection is bhakti. Mula tat charanarchanam. Mula means root. Charanarchanam is worship, archanam of your charan, of your feet. Whether it is swarga, apavarga, swarga means heavenly, apavarga means liberation, and so on. So this is a famous verse of the Bhagavatam which shows bhakti is the root cause of any perfections in any practice. In other words, if you are choosing to engage in some practice different from bhakti, at some point you will need to mix your practice with bhakti, so your practice bears the corresponding fruit. If you fail to do so, that practice you are embracing is not enough to carry you to the desired fruit of that particular practice, what to speak of the highest perfection. Let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Today we will, I think, share a little bit more brief our commentary. Let's see, we never know. But he says like this, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki jai. One can achieve success by performing any one of the methods of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting. Dina Srimha Purana confirms this. Since one can easily attain the original personality of Godhead by worshipping Him with devotion using leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are always easily available without having to spend money, why should one undergo hardship for impersonal liberation? That's what the Nrsimha Purana says. On one side you have this very complicated, miserable situation and great effort and no result, striving for impersonal realization. On the other side, you have Krishna saying, Patram pushpam phalanto yam yome bhaktya prayachati tadham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmana. Oh, for me, one flower. One. He's using the singular there. He said, one flower, one leaf, one water, if you want to put it, one drop. Of course, it seems easy. At the same time, he's using two times the word bhakti in the verse, like implying, give me your heart. No? Externally, you can give me one leaf, but I want your heart. Actually, Krishna is saying, I don't care for the external offering. I care for where your heart is during the offering. And the more your heart is present in the offering, generally, the more the offering simplifies externally, because so much elaborate presentation is being made from your heart. But as long as we don't have our heart falling out of the right place, then we should engage our time, money, and everything to make the best possible offering externally to Krishna. So our senses. And once someone asks his guru, Gurudev, are you more interested in my heart or in my pocket? Interesting question to ask your guru. Anyhow. And he said, I'm interested in both of them. And then he said, why? Because your heart is in your pocket now. Actually, the idea is, I'm actually interested in your heart, but now your heart is in your pocket. So that's why I'm interested in your pocket. Not because of the pocket itself, but of your heart which is there. So give me your pocket. That's why in some religions they say, of course, it's properly enacted, not abused, but give, how do you say in English? When they ask for this 10% or something? Tithing. So tithing, which give something which is not that painful, but give something. So in sustainable installments, start to leave your attachments and give something of that. Of course, someone will say, but God doesn't need my money. Of course not. But you need to give Him your money. You need to get detached from that and to offer something in sacrifice. And so this verse of the Narasimha Purana is making this contrast. No, I mean, if it's so easy to engage in bhakti, relatively, again, easy, why choosing such a complex, hard, and no-result process like jnana or something? you can offer Krishna just one leaf, you know, Tulasi, Dattra Matra, and the same mantra with Advaita Acharya was calling Mahaprabhu to come. And he remembered this verse from Shastra. If you offer just one Tulsi leaf and Ganga Jal, Ganga water to Shalagram, Bhagavan becomes captured by that person. Not that much elaborate externally, but internally, so much was there, of course. So that's the idea, no? A devotee is absorbed in bhakti, the devotee doesn't care for anything else, the devotee just wants to please Bhagavan. Narayana para sarvina kutashana vibhyati sargapa varga narakisa pituliartha darshana. The devotee doesn't care for heaven, hell, liberation, but just service to Bhagavan. If I can render service to Bhagavan in heaven, let's go there. If I can service to Bhagavan in hell, no problem. In one sense, no, the point is, you are where your inner consciousness is. No? If you are absorbing service to Bhagavan, you are in heaven or beyond heaven, even if externally you are in hell. Let's see. No? Like Prahlad Maharaj, for a moment, he's depicted as being one of the inferior planets, if you want to put it like that. But he's not inferior. And so on. Anyhow. So that's the logic of bhakti. You know? The devotee will say, I won't use my time and my energy uselessly if I can obtain the same result or more in a much more simple way. We have to be practical. And this is a very well-known example of two people in the Kumbh Mela. You know Kumbh Mela, you have heard? This is like a big mystic supermarket also. Like you can go and... I mean, it's a sacred event. I don't want to downplay the event. But my point is that also some people come like showing themselves, no? Like, look how good of a yogi I am and look my mystic power and wanting to attract some followers and whatnot. Of course, there are lots of genuine bona fide practitioners, but again, there's a mixture of everything. So there was this yogi who was practicing like 20 years tapasya and penance, so he could develop one of the yoga siddhis that allow him to walk on the water. No? There's one of the 8 Asta main yoga siddhis that allows you to walk on the water. So he was with one friend there in the Kumbh Mela, said, look, no? Look what I obtained after these 20 years of practice. No? He like crossed the river, no? Like walking. And some people were like, wow. So the devotee say, look, no? He calls one boatman, gives 2 rupees, put me on the other side of the river. Okay, 2 rupees, 5 seconds. You 20 years investing to do the same thing. Had to be practical. What's the purpose of that? I can do the same thing paying 2 rupees and I can invest those 20 years in a much more substantive investment than just crossing the river, walking on top of the water. I mean, that's not the great thing. I mean... Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues. He refers to Sridhar Swami and says, we see how many of the commentators refer back to Sridhar Swami because he's kind of the elder in the tradition of commentaries on the Bhagavatam for us Gaudis. Even Mahaprabhu himself referred to him with lots of respect and veneration. So Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Sridhar Swami says that Jnana is a dry path. Whereas bhakti is a cool stream flowing like a river of honey. Like another way to create this contrast. Because this is the dynamics of this verse, constantly contrasting bhakti and jnana. How easy one is, how complex one is, how great the results one is given, how no results are coming from the other one. How jnana depends on bhakti, how bhakti is independent. And in this context, how jnana is a dry path, and how bhakti is a cool stream flowing with a river of honey. No? So it's something like flows, something that is sweet, that you can be... See, if you enter that current, you are carried by the current. That's also the idea. If you enter the current of the river, you don't have to... You don't even have to swim, basically. You have just to be there, and the current is taking you. You don't have to make any effort, basically. No? what to speak of swimming against the current. You just enter in the current and let the current take you. It's a sweet current. It's a honey-like current. And in comparison, jnana is like being thrown into the Sahara Desert or something. And you're like, okay, a dry place. What to do? Nobody's like, there's no current taking me. Everything depends on my own effort. So it's a big difference. The word Shreya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, which means Shreya. Only Shreya now. I'm not asking Shreya Shritim. Now one, only the first word.
Auspicious.
Auspiciousness.
Auspiciousness.
Yeah. Or supreme benefit and so on. So this word Shreya also refers to all the fruits of all other processes, such as karma and jnana, as we mentioned. Bhakti not only is giving the highest benefit, but it also includes as a byproduct all the other results of other processes, if someone may be interested in those things. Again, a devotee is not interested in that. He's not interested in bhakti, in mukti, in siddhi. He's only interested in bhakti, because the devotee understands, the more I'm interested in all these other things, I maintain a separate sense of self, a separate sense of doership, and I cannot attain real peace. Real peace comes when you are aligned with the center, with your source. Krishna, bhukti mukti, what is the verse?
Mukti sarikarma.
Sakalya santa. No, Krishna bhakti, no, what is it? Atayeva santa. Mukti mukti siddhikami sakalya santa. Krishna bhakta nishkam atayiva santa. Mukti mukti siddhikami sakalya santa. We are getting old. How to remember. No. I entered. That verse will come much more quicker before. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita is saying, Krishna bhakta nishkam atayiva santa. So, a devotee of Krishna is nishkam, is free from desires, free from selfishness. And therefore, Atayva Shanta. He can be Shanta. Shanta means he has Shanti. He's peaceful. Because he has not separate desire. He's aligned with the center. His desires are Krishna's desires and vice versa. So there is peace. Whereas on the contrary, Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami, Sakali, Ashanta. Those who desire Bhukti, sense enjoyment, Mukti, liberation, Siddhi, yogic perfection, Kami. They are full of desires. I want this, I want that, I want that, I want that. I have a long list of I wants. Sakalya Santa. Therefore, they cannot sleep at peace at night. They are not at peace. They are Ashanta. Still. So that's an important point. No? Our lack of peace is because, basically, we still have separate interests. Now, what is forcing us to have the same interest as Krishna, but we have to know separate interests, because it means mental agitation, because we are again swimming against the current, basically. So bhakti is being carried by the current, not swimming against the current. So there is peace there. The path of bhakti gives all these fruits, and it's thus called the Shreya Shritim, or the path of supreme benefit. The jnanis who reject the path of auspiciousness get only suffering. The gist is, rejecting a small quantity of rice, no, the example at the end of the verse, with great effort a person might gather a great mountain of rice husks and try to thresh rice from it. The result of the effort is pain in the hands and no rice. So try to make the math there. How much is worthy to do that? No? Again, klesha dikaratashtisam. You obtain misery, you obtain suffering. So, again, the point of the verse is, if you want to attain, okay, if you don't want Gyan Sunya Bhakti and you don't want to become a gopi or a gopi in Vrindavan and serve Krishna totally, selflessly, and you want something else, you want mukti, you want to enjoy, okay, embrace bhakti. I mean, through bhakti you will attain all the things and more. That's the statement. Srinath Chakravarti, in his commentary, he quotes this famous verse from the Bhagavatam, which is Akama Sarma Kamo Ba Moksha Kama Udharadi Tibrena Bhakti Jogena Jayeta Purushamparam. So that's an interesting verse. He says Akama, which means without desire. If you are without desires, akama, sarvakama, if you have all the desires of the world, there's people who have that capacity. I mean, it's never enough, but there's people with a long list. So whether you have no desires what at all, whether you have all the desires, or whether you have some desires, moksha kama, for example, desire for moksha, which actually has to be pretty intense, as my Guru Maharaj explains, because if you want moksha, that means, moksha means to go beyond this world, to go beyond the desires of this world. So to go beyond, the desires of this world are pretty strong. But if you want to desire something that goes beyond the desires of this world, that desire has to be even stronger. So a desire for moksha is, in one sense, a more strong desire than a desire for sense enjoyment. You follow my point? Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's more difficult to give up. That's why many times in Shastras it's cautioned, be careful with desire for mukti. Because that may be more difficult to transcend that situation and be inclined towards bhakti than if you are only desiring sense enjoyment in this world. That's comparatively not so strong. But if you have a very strong desire for mukti that you must have if you want to obtain mukti, that's one of the preliminary points in Sankaracharya's lineages. Mukshatva means you have to strongly want to get out of the samsara. That's what jnanis are about. Neti, neti. This is maya, 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 maya. All this world is unreal. Only Brahman is real. And they have a very strong desire for that, to the point that they have no desire for this world. But the point, going to the verse of the Bhagavatam, is whether you don't have any desire, whether you have all desires in the world, whether you have a desire for getting out of the world, whatever the case, tibrena bhakti yogena jayeta purushampara, engage with firm determination in bhakti yoga towards Bhagavan. And you will receive whatever results you need. No need to engage in something separate. You just engage in bhakti. So that's basically the conclusion of Brahma here. And this is one, again, of the very, very famous statements from the Brahma Stuti. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes this verse many times in his Bhakti Sandarbha, which is his treatise on bhakti, on trying to make clear what's bhakti and what's not bhakti. He refers to this verse like 6-7 times throughout the book. So basically the verse is telling us that without bhakti, a jnani will meet only with failure. Basically, with all respect for the Gyan Marga. A similar verse we quoted the other day also from the Bhagavatam. I'm sorry for torturing you with so many verses today. Yenyera vindaksha vimukta maninasta yasta bhavada vishuddha budaya aruhya krichina paramparantata patyantya donadrita yashmadangaya. Which basically refers to a very advanced jnani who attained jivan mukti, who is still on this body and just needs his prarabdha karma to expire. This body needs to leave this body, he or she, or whatever he or she leaves the body, he, Brahma Sayuja, enters Brahman. But the point is, if he offends bhakti, he rejects bhakti, like this verse is mentioning, they fall from that situation, which is pretty advanced, but they fall. Vimukta maninas, they think they are liberated, but they are not. And by offending bhakti, they fall. So the point is, if someone wants to attain Brahman, if someone wants to attain unit oneness with the Absolute, this type of impersonal liberation, which is not our goal, basically, it's not something we long for, but it's possible, it's one of the five muktis, ekkatvam, you can do that. But you have to be very careful not to offend bhakti in the attempt of attaining that. Sometimes this is mentioned with two different words, which are Brahma body and Maya body. Right. So Maya body is the person who says only Brahman is real. Only Brahman is real. Everything is illusion. Even the form of Krishna is illusion. The jiva is an illusion. The world is an illusion. Bhakti is an illusion. Everything is illusion except Brahman. So those persons are offending bhakti by thinking like that. And therefore, they fall and they do not attain that goal. But the Brahma body will be someone who says, I accept Bhagavan, I accept bhakti, the world is one of the shaktis of Bhagavan, But I'm attracted to Brahman. I want to attain that impersonal liberation. And I will mix my gyan with some bhakti so I can attain that ultimate goal. And those who do that respecting bhakti, they attain Brahma's yuja. Again, it's not our goal, but there is a way to do that. But offering proper regards to bhakti again. Here this verse is speaking about those who reject bhakti altogether and they obtain nothing basically. Sword, hands and so on basically. So again, but the conclusion again is if jnana depends so much on bhakti to give its ultimate fruit, or if karma depends so much on bhakti to give its ultimate fruit, again the kaimutya nyaya, the what if logic is, what if you engage in bhakti directly? Again, this verse try to maintain that in the bigger picture. Brahma is glorifying bhakti from one place, from another, directly, indirectly, by speaking about how other processes fail totally without bhakti, by directly addressing the glories of bhakti. So here Brahma wants to hint at this idea. If all these other processes, yogic processes, knowledge processes, depend so much in bhakti for giving their results, what must happen if someone just engages in bhakti exclusively? That's Brahma's, again, desire. So he's establishing this foundation of Sudha Bhakti, which is the definition of Rupa Goswami. Jnana, Karma, Adi, and Avritam. The type of bhakti, Uttam Bhakti, that we want to practice is not mixed with jnana nor karma. It's pure bhakti. Anukulena Krishnano Shilanam Bhakti Rotama. We are engaging in acts favorable for Krishna's pleasure, and we engage in them with the intention of giving pleasure to Krishna. We are not doing only accidentally something that Krishna likes, but we are doing that with intention that Krishna may like that. You follow? There's a difference. No? You can do something for Krishna which accidentally he likes, but not with intention of liking Krishna. No? Kamsa was thinking about Krishna 24/7. And Krishna always says, what was the last instruction in the Bhagavad Gita? Manmana. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Manmana gives, always think in me, about me, Krishna is saying. And we could say, well, Kamsa was doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 24 hours a day, it is described in the Bhagavad. He was even dreaming about Krishna. But.
Unfavorably.
Sorry?
Unfavorably.
Exactly. No, it was not anukul, but pratikul. He wanted to kill Krishna, he was afraid of Krishna for. Mrityu bojapater, no, as says the Bhagavatam, for Kamsa, Krishna was death personified. So he was not absorbing Krishna favorably. So Brahma is trying to establish this foundation of what's bhakti for us. No? How we have to understand clearly which is the type of bhakti we want to practice, because if that's not clear, if the conception is not clear, the practice will be distracted, diluted, confused, whatever, no? So, and on top of this, just to conclude, Brahma is mentioning, again, how easy bhakti is. Pretty easy in comparison to any other process, and there's no loss nor diminution. You cannot lose in bhakti, basically. In these other processes, you don't win anything without bhakti. And as I mentioned, if you engage in bhakti, free from all processes, you don't lose anything. Krishna says that in the Gita, Neha Bikramana Susti Pratyabhayana Vidyate Salpamapyasya Dharmasya Trayati Mahatubhayat. In this process, there is no loss nor diminution, and whatever gain one obtains will protect one from the greatest danger. So, that's pretty encouraging. I mean, Krishna is basically like, why should we not engage in bhakti, basically? Of course, if you go against bhakti, that's another thing. Now, you cannot lose in bhakti unless you go against bhakti, which makes sense. Unless you bite the hand that is feeding you, which we call aparad. That will create some interruption in your process. The fruits of the bhakti you have performed won't bear fruit that quickly because of some aparad. That's what's happening with most of us on some level or another. No? There is aparad, not to enter into neurosis and just take the whip and But Shastri say, no, if you just chant once, half a syllable or whatever, and all the symptoms, ecstatic symptoms are not coming, you have to know some parade is there, consciously, unconsciously, on some level. That is delaying the result of your bhakti. That will come in time, but it may make that a little bit longer. So we have to be careful about aparadic and not in neurosis mode, but just be aware of that. So basically that today, Brahma is speaking again in connection to the next verse that we will see in North Carolina, but hopefully we can see continuing online in this sense. Here Brahma is speaking about the jnanis, again, what do they obtain without bhakti? In the next verse, Brahma will contrast this statement, I will refer to the yogis, a slightly different practitioner, no? Yoga mark and jnana mark, and he will speak how the yogis obtain perfection in their paths by mixing their paths with bhakti. No? So here he's speaking how the jnanis fail totally, but not by rejecting bhakti in their paths, by not mixing jnana with bhakti. Next verse, Krishna, Brahma will contrast mentioning how yogis obtain the fruit of their paths by mixing bhakti, including bhakti in their practice, no? And therefore making the idea complete, how with bhakti, whatever you need is attained, without bhakti, just invitation for trouble, basically. Anyhow, some words we want to share today. I don't know if there are any questions before we finish, we have a few minutes. Yes, yes.
So you mentioned this yogi fellow who walked across the Ganges. Is that something that you get? Is that like a gift that Krishna gives you? Or is it some other thing?
What, sorry?
You know, the yoga cities. Mm-hmm. Are they like just from Krishna because of bhakti, or are they something else?
Not necessarily, no. Yoga cities is like a mechanical... So it's the fruit of some mechanical practice, if you will. No? I mean, we call it mystical, but in one sense, as we were speaking today about technology,
right,
which is like, there is some mysticism to it, but actually, it's like a gross version of the yogic siddhis, basically, no? Which is what they can like manipulate psychic matter, and things like for us are like, wow, like magic. But they learn how to deal with these subtle laws of nature. Still is material, but it's subtle, and they really
gotcha.
Perform samanya, which means full condensed concentration in one particular direction, to the point that they can comprehensively understand how some element of nature works, and they start to act, move that as at wish, basically. So again, for us, that's a miracle. Generally, we call miracles something that we just do not know the procedure of that. When you know the procedure, is no longer a miracle. Say, I know how to do that also. No? So yeah, yogic mysticism, technically speaking, is not necessarily even spiritual. No? For example, you have Hiranyakashipu. He was a great yogi. He had mystic powers, but he was an asura. He was not a devotee of Krishna, praying to Krishna. He wanted to kill Krishna, basically. So we can see how someone can be a very advanced yogi with these siddhis and be an atheist at the same time. Okay. So the point with this is that's totally material. Like someone totally materialistic in this world can develop a high degree of material development or knowledge about science and technology. Go a little bit further and you have someone being developing mystic yoga and siddhis. It's the same direction, if you will. Something material but more refined. So I'm not saying that every yogi with siddhis is atheist, no, for sure. But you can practice yoga as a physical discipline. Physical, I mean material discipline, physical and psychic, and learn how to manipulate the laws of nature and how to understand them comprehensively to a point that you start to do all the things, no? Like penetrate the atom, read others' minds, walk on water, disappear, manifest things from the distance, which we are like, how can you do that? Or we may think even, oh, that's super spiritual. And there are lots of these so-called gurus that many of them have these siddhis. And basically they cheat people. No? They manifest something. And maybe they are actually manifesting that they have siddhis. Some of them may be just magicians on a lower level, but some of them may have to see this, but still they are cheating people and cheating themselves. That's still a material performance, if you will, that has nothing to do with spirituality. But people sometimes, unfortunately, so uneducated that just you manifest a ball of whatever from your mouth, and they already are ready to accept you as an avatar of God, basically. And they don't understand that you can do that just on exclusively material terms. You can be materialistic. I mean, Hiranyakashipu was pretty materialistic. I mean, his name speaks for that. No? Gold and soft bed. Hiranyakashipu. So these atheist yogis, they perform sometimes extreme tapasya to enjoy on a unlimited high, very high level. So that's also the situation. You see them doing lots of penance, but the fruit they want to obtain by that penance is complete enjoyment. That was what Hiranyakashipu wanted also. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to perform tapasya for the sake of tapasya. He just wanted to invoke Brahma, the deity of his tapasya, and to ask, I want this, I want that, I want that, give me this, give me that. And he showed how materialistic he was. No, I mean, externally it seemed, oh, he's like this for how long time, and wow, and half of his body is eaten by ants, and he's super, whatever you can think. But when Brahma came, what do you need? And Hiranyakashipu pulled the long list. Okay, I want this. That's his mysticism there. No? So yeah, we should be careful of not being cheated. I really understand comprehensively what's actually spiritual. And, because as we say yesterday, no, very easy to misunderstand a devotee. A devotee can seem a materialistic person, and an atheist can seem a mystical transcendentalist. And actually that a so-called mystic transcendentalist is a follower of Hiranyakashipu, if you will. And a devotee may be engaged with the world for the sake of service, and is a higher transcendentalist than that who lives in the cave, who knows, standing on one leg or whatever. So again, Vaishnava Kriyamudra Vignyena Vuyaha, not so easy to understand the Vaishnavas. Like when Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was in India. And generally at that time, the idea is he is a sannyasi has to go barefoot, walking to wherever he goes. He cannot use a car. At that time, cars were coming, and all those things coming from the modern world, the sannyasi shouldn't touch even the shadow of those things. And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was riding cars, and they were asking like, but why you are riding cars? And he said, why you are a Vaishnava, right? He said, yes. Why Vaishnavas are riding cars? And he said, only Vaishnavas should be riding cars. Like implying, we know what's the purpose of this. We understand this is an energy of Krishna. We are actually using that in his service. So only us, we are allowed to use this stuff. Nobody else should. He put the whole question upwards. Now, why am you doing? Only we should be doing. Of course, this is not an excuse to gratify yourself. No, I am a devotee, so everything in Krishna's service. I mean, you have to be authentic. You have to have integrity, but there is potential for that. As there is potential to make, again, an external show of mysticism and just be preoccupied with mundane things. No? So, anyhow. Okay, so I think we can leave here. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Shri Brajanath Haladar ki jai, Shri Nrisimha Bhagavan ki jai, Shri Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda.